Praise the Lord. This is Rosario Abati, founder of Scriptures for Us. I want to thank everybody for giving some of their time off to listen to my testimony. Don't expect a gory testimony like some people who, you know, find themselves on the street or whatever, you know. Mine's, you know, simple, easy to understand. So it's just basically a typical testimony that most people probably can identify with. Now, if this is your first time listening to this, maybe you don't understand the rules, but during this particular show, we're not going to have any questions during the testimony because I don't want to get caught off track. And, you know, normally if we're on a business call, we allow calls during the actual show itself and after. So this time, if you have a question or a comment, then I would just appreciate it if you wait till the end, and then you can give your comment or question at that point in time. Now, if you're not a member of Scriptures, then I suggest you at least sign up to get your own website. You know, you're never obligated to do anything, but we like people that to get at least get their website, because this way, if you decide that this is what you want to do, then you're already set up to go. Plus, every time someone signs up for their website, they're going to be put on our list. You know, their email is put in our system, and they will be getting script news, you know, a couple times a week, letting them know exactly what's going on. So this way, let's say they just joined last week, they get their script news, and they see that, you know, I'm giving my testimony, and, you know, maybe that, you know, if they didn't give us their website or didn't sign up or just maybe was waiting, then they would never be able to listen to the show unless someone else told them. So if you haven't become a member, see, a member to us is someone who gets their own website. If you don't, whatever you do after that is strictly up to you. We don't force anybody to do everything. But what's good about doing that is you're all set to go. Once you decided, well, I really want to do this, and then you're already set to go. You don't have to do anything else. Everything is already set up for you. And it's all free. You know, I mean, you get your own personal website. I think it's 10 pages long. With everything that a person needs to know, if they go to your website, they'll know exactly what we're offering. And when they click on the info pack, okay, then you'll get credit for signing that person up. It's all done automatically. Plus, you'll get an email telling you who this person is and their email address, their phone number, their regular address, city, state. So you can communicate with them just basically to get to know them so you can work together. You know, as I always say, two heads are better than one. Work together to build a prosperous group. You know, if you try to do this by yourself, it's a little bit more difficult. So get to know your members that join your group. Also, you want to make sure that you check their email to make sure it's correct, because if it's not correct, then they don't get anything from us. And if you don't call them and correct the email address, then they're going to think, well, this is probably just a scam. All they wanted to get from me was my information so they could sell it to somebody else. And believe me, that's what people think. See, so it's extremely important if you're going to take this business serious to get on the phone. It only takes 5 minutes just to confirm their information. So with no further ado, I'll give you my testimony, okay? But before, I'd like to say just a little prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, I just thank you that you saved me. And I hope and pray that there is someone listening right now that will get their heart will be touched and they will get to know you in a personal way, like I do. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. Okay, here's my testimony. I'll start right from the beginning, okay? I was born in Cleveland, Ohio. And I was born in an all-Italian neighborhood. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Cleveland, in case you don't know. You know, in the late 19th century and the early 20th century, you know, there were millions and millions of people migrating to the United States. Most of those people, because they were working people, came north and settled in, you know, big cities like New York, Chicago, Detroit, so forth and so on. And they always managed to stay together. Like in Cleveland, we had, I think, at that time about five different Italian neighborhoods. There was Hungarian neighborhoods, there was Polish neighborhoods, there was Czechoslovakian neighborhoods, there was Chinese neighborhoods. You know, Cleveland was a very, very ethnic city, like most of your northern cities were at that time. And, you know, many times if you would come to my neighborhood, you know, a lot of people that lived there, they couldn't even speak English, and they'd been there for 20 years, so... You know, that's how close-knit these neighborhoods were. They didn't want to go anywhere else or learn any other kind of language. But anyhow, the neighborhood I grew up in then was a, you know, safe neighborhood. Now you couldn't even walk through there. But, you know, sometimes when I tell people, they don't believe me. I said, you know, you didn't even lock your door. You know, somebody knocked on the door, you just say, come in, you know, oh, hey, we got company, you know, get out the sausage and peppers here. And the drinks, and, you know, but nowadays you can't do that. My God in heaven, you have to hide behind your door. You look through that little peephole. You know, people are living in fear now. I remember my dad used to leave his key in, his key in the car, and no one ever stole it. In fact, that neighborhood was self-governed. In other words, people from the outside would never want to come there to try to start trouble, because if they do that, they were already in trouble, you know. We took care of our own. We looked out for our own. Nowadays, people lock themselves in their houses. I don't know if you live in a big city or not, but if you do, you know exactly what I'm talking about. In the inner cities, you know, you go up and down streets, and people have bars on their doors and their windows, and they go in their home, and they don't leave it. They're a prisoner in their own home. That's a shame, really, but that's... You know, the evil, wicked generation that we're living in right now. But anyhow, that my particular neighborhood had a nickname, okay? Well, they all kind of did, but this was kind of a unique name. You know, if you, let's say, be somewhere else and you're talking to somebody, oh, where do you live at? What neighborhood do you live in? You know, I would say Bloody Corner. Bloody Corner. Well, everybody knew that Bloody Corner was East 110th and Woodland. Now, the way it got that neighborhood, not because people were getting killed, okay, but it got that neighborhood because during the prohibition period of time, there were two brothers that were, one of the guys' names was Rosario. I can't think of their last name. I should know it. Because, and, you know, even strange that they're... nephew is the chief of police in Lyndhurst, Ohio, which is a suburb of Cleveland. Oh, Perello, that was their name, yeah. Perello. In fact, this guy Perello, that chief of police in Lyndhurst, made a movie about Danny Green, who was a gangster during the 70s, I think it was, and he tried to go up against the Cleveland Mafia, and you know what happens when you do that. But if you ever want to see it, interesting movie, how this guy was saved from death, I don't know how many different times. It's called Kill the Irishman, okay? It's an interesting story. It's not nothing like The Godfather or anything like that, but it's a true story. And I think, you know, people from Cleveland probably would appreciate watching that movie more than someone who maybe was not familiar with Danny Green. But anyhow, it was called Bloody Corner because during Prohibition, you know, during Prohibition, like you... If you ever watched The Untouchables, you know, there are people getting killed all the time. And but these two Perello brothers were in a barbershop, and somebody from another, you know, mafia group here in Cleveland went in there and shot him, killed him right in the barbershop. And that's how it wound up getting its name, Bloody Corner, you know. But I'll tell you one thing about that place, it sure was safe, and people from other neighborhoods would come in there. You know, people would ask them, what are you doing here? You know, we wanted to know why people from that neighborhood who kind of drifted in there, you know, what are you doing here? We want to know what you're doing here. And that's the way that everybody looked out for each other. There was hardly any crime at all. in that neighborhood for that reason, because we looked out for each other. We didn't want people coming to our neighborhood and robbing people or beating them up or stealing people's purses. That very, very rarely happened. Now, if you go down to that same neighborhood, okay, nowadays you'd be lucky if you can walk from one end of 110th and Woodland up to 116th in Woodland. I mean, that's how bad it is there now. But in spite of that, I did love the neighborhood. I loved the people I hung around with. Loved the people that were, you know, during that time, you were always out. Everybody was out. You weren't stuck in your house playing video games. Everybody was out. And Friday night was always the best night because right on the corner of East 110th, just about everybody from the whole neighborhood would be there because there was like a big lawn there where people could just sit on the lawn or they could, you know, get like a chair and sit on the chair. And you know, a lot of the older men, they would go in the back of that barbershop where those guys got killed and they'd be playing dice. And, you know, but you knew everybody in the whole neighborhood. And that's what was nice about it. Just like a great place to live. And, you know, again, nowadays sometimes people don't even know their own neighbor. And it's a shame. But anyhow, eventually I moved out of there. We moved into a better neighborhood. And this one was on East Boulevard. We bought a home on East 110th. I lived in an apartment. We never had a home up until, you know, my dad saved enough money and mom, because both my mom and dad worked, to buy a house. And it was like a dream world going there because they had two lawns, one in the back, you know, and I was just so happy to be there. It was just like I never lived in a home. I always lived in an apartment. If I showed you some pictures, you know, there was like no grass. And the front was all like just dead dirt. So to have a lawn, and I thought, oh, wow, I'll be able to cut this, you know. But that wore off after a while. You know, I hated cutting grass. I wanted to be out with my friends, you know. So then I moved to East Boulevard, and of course, that was another Italian neighborhood. So all the people I got to know were, of course, Italian. There might have been a few in there that weren't, but you know, 90% of my friends were Italian, and none of them really, including myself, you know, we were not like the mafia. Like some people, as soon as you see you're Italian, they immediately think of the mafia. I can't begin to tell you how many people have asked me that. Did you know any of your relatives in the mafia or something? I said, no. But there were some definitely mafia people on East 110th and Woodland. In fact, there were more mafia people there than there was in what they call today, literally. That's where the mafia eventually wound up going to, but I don't want to get into any mafia stories, all right? But again, we all got to know each other in high school and junior high school, and we hung around. We didn't do anything bad. Basically, that's all we did. We hung around. Always somehow was always some corner somewhere or some drugstore, you know. And I would just, you know, have fun, go here, go there, go to the playground, play basketball. But we weren't looking for any kind of someone to kill or beat up or anything like that. Of course, like in any, you know, inner city neighborhood, you're bound to, get in a fight with somebody. And I've done that many times. In fact, then, you know, you got in a fight with somebody, then you wind up becoming friends. I mean, God forbid, nowadays, you get in a fight with somebody and you got to watch your back because somebody's probably going to come behind you or drive by your house and kill you. You know, so, you know, our world is getting worse and worse, and that's what Paul meant when he says that in the end times, you know, things will get worse and worse and worse, and I don't know how, unless you're a blind person, if you can't see that, then it might be a good idea to go out and get a pair of glasses, because that's all we see nowadays, and that's all we hear about, is the violence. Not only in this country and in this city, but all over the whole world. I mean, it's really crazy when you think about it. But anyhow, being Italian, naturally, I was raised Roman Catholic. I didn't know any better. Used to go to church every Sunday because your parents basically forced you to go. But I hated going there. I really did. I have to to be honest. I didn't like going there. I didn't understand what they were saying. You know, they give you a sermon that lasted they call it the gospel, and that's the gospel for today. It was like 2 minutes long. So you didn't know what your relationship with God was then. You know, you thought, well, you know, your relationship with God is based on the Ten Commandments. And if you can keep the Ten Commandments, then you're okay. Of course, the Catholic Church added everything else to the Ten Commandments except the kitchen sink. You know, then you had to do the stations, and you had to do this, and you had to go to confession. And I remember how many times I'd come out of confession, and I'd be kneeling there doing my penance, and a nice-looking girl walked by, and I'd say, whoa, there's a sharp-looking girl, and uh-oh, you know, back in the confession. I mean, all of my friends, we were all the same, you know. We were really tough guys, but not criminals, you know. And we always used to laugh, say, well, you know, we all know we're going to hell, and at least we'll be there together, we'll be playing cards and so forth and so on. So, you know, I had divorced myself from the Catholic Church because there was no way. I mean, I knew it then. There was no way that I could do everything that they told me to do. So I just resigned myself to, well, when I die, I'm just going to hell. That's all there is to it. Well, eventually I wound up going to a high school, John Adams High School. That was right near where we lived, out on East Boulevard, and graduated. At my father, during that period of time, worked at one of the newspapers. And I always thought, well, when I get out of high school, that's where I'm going to be. Well, I just got lucky because they would only hire apprentices, you know, when that apprentice went up to a journeyman. Well, it just happened to be, just as I got out of school, there was an opening at the newspaper, the Cleveland Press, it was called, for an apprentice. Well, I remember the first day I was there, and I saw I worked in the mailing department. It's not where they, you know, the U.S. mail, it's where they actually, the newspaper comes off the press, and it goes up these conveyors, and then you have to scoop up these bundles, they call them. You know, sometimes if the paper's real thin, there'd be like one paper turned out there, so you can know that's 25. If it was a larger one, then, I mean, if that was 50, then if it was a larger one, that would be every 25. And then you just scoop up that batch of papers and put another bundle on top of there and put it on a conveyor belt, then it would go down and someone would put another piece of paper on top and it would go down to a tying machine and tie the automatically put a wire on it, and then it would go down to the loading dock, went into the truck. But I remember the first day I was there, I looked at this and I said, you know what, someone's going to find a way to automate this, because it was just too easy, you know. In fact, you know, it was called really a gravy job. Easy, you know, we started at 9 o'clock, sometimes depending on when the run finished, you know. Sometimes it'd be finished early, and there was no reason for you to be there, so you get out early, so you work maybe 6.5 hours that day. Sometimes it went a little bit over, but then you got overtime. You know, if the press would, like, tear paper, they'd have to rewind. They have to run it all through again and start it all over again. So you did lose time there, but definitely was a gravy job, and I loved it. I loved the people I worked with. I told somebody one time when I was out in California, where my brother lives at, told the guy next door. He says, you know, they were making now. Then I think after I quit, they were making like $28 an hour or something like that. And one of the jobs is you, like, would switch, you know, conveyors had about 5-6 different people on you, but you'd be switching, so you wouldn't do the same thing all day. But one of the things is you just sit there, and you put a piece of paper on top of one of these bundles, and that's it. You know, and then the other one at the other end, where the tying machine was, it just, you sit there and just make sure it went in there correctly, and that was about it. So it's like what they would call a gravy job, you know. But one thing I must say, I was right. You know, after about 5 years, sure enough, they come out with a machine that was able to stack those papers automatically. And but eventually, I was there for about 5 years, and I really liked it. And I liked it because I turned 21, and one of the first things I did was find a bar where there was I was able to drink. So there was this really popular place on the west side of Cleveland. I lived on the east side, and in fact, most of the people that went there were Italians from the east side. But I remember the first time I went in there was like going into a dream world. I'll never forget the feeling I had. They actually had a live band. Well, I never went to a bar where they had live bands, you know. But this was a live band. You could dance, you know. And so that's exactly what I did. I fell in love with that place. And then eventually I would find different places to go to closer by. But that was my lifestyle, like almost at least five times a week. And I remember I used to go to stay out to 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And I'd have to get up the next day to get to work. And by the time I come home, I'm bushed. So I'd eat dinner. Then I'd head right upstairs to the bedroom. And I'd sleep till about 10 o'clock and then take a shower and go out to the nightclubs again. Now then, at first when I started going there, we used to have maybe a little bit to drink, but not very much, you know. I didn't really get drunk. But as time went by, the dancing became less and the drinking became more. And I remember as it got really bad, you know, I would, at the end of the night, which is one of the reasons I used to go there, is to pick up girls, you know. But as time goes by, you know, they all start to look good, you know. Get enough beers in somebody, and you know, everybody in there looks good until the next morning. You know, and then you become like Curly. Oh, you know, what did I do? And then you're right back doing the same thing. But I can't say that I was, like, depressed during that period of time or downtrodden in any way. I really liked that lifestyle. You know, I was a sinner. What else can I tell you? I'm telling you the truth. I'm not going to lie. But anyhow, eventually after 5 years, there was an opening at the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Now, the Cleveland Plain Dealer was a night job. And if I didn't take that, then I would lose my job. They have to, when you're promoted to journeyman, you have to take the job no matter where it's at. Well, the Plain Dealer was nights, and I'd go to work at 9 o'clock in the morning, not 9 o'clock at night, not 9 o'clock in the morning, and then I would work till 4:30. Well, guess what? There's what my nightlife. So most of the time, a couple of times a week, I would just call off because you know there were always people that in the union that would want to work. So if you called off and they had somebody that would take your place that night, you're able to take off with no problem. So I wanted to get my nightlife back, so at least I have a couple times a week that I'd be going out to the bars again. But eventually it got to the point where, hey, you know, I hated that particular job. It was totally different than what I had. And so I thought, well, you know, it's time for me to get out of here. So I wind up going to another job at a shoe store, I can't remember. And, a couple of other jobs here and there. And then, I got a job selling beauty supplies. Now, I had a cousin, and I didn't know the first thing about beauty supplies or hair, or, you know, being a stylist or anything like that. So I had a cousin that owned a hair school, beauty school in downtown Cleveland. It's called White Cross, and I went over to his salon. He had a salon, too, as well. And I asked him, I said, hey, Lenny, would you mind if I went to your school there? I just told him I had got this job selling beauty supplies. I don't know the first thing about beauty supplies. And, you know, maybe if I went to school, you know, it could help me in my job selling. So I said, sure, you know, no problem. And he says, by the way, if you'd like it, you know, he says, we'll give you a job at our salon. So after a while, I said, you know, it's not a bad job, you know. So I went all the way through, passed my examination in Columbus, because you have to be licensed to do hair in Ohio. Well, most states, I think you have to. I passed it, and I went to work for my cousin. And eventually I got to the point where I don't want to work for anybody. I want to just open my own salon. So I started looking in the paper on their business opportunities, and I found one close to where I live at, and went in there, and it was an accountant that owned the place. She didn't know anything about running a beauty salon, so I guess the business was going down, and I made her an offer, and she says, no, that's too low. And a couple of days later, she called me up and says, well, you know, I'll sell you the salon at the price you want. So I wound up getting a salon for a real cheap price. But it was like an old lady's, I shouldn't say that, but it was like an old type of salon where they were doing roller sets and stuff like that. And I wasn't into that. I wanted to get into the blow-drying, cut and blow-drying. So I got rid of all the customers that were coming there, remodeled the whole salon, made it nice and modern, start getting people in there. And I want to mention this because this has a lot to do with the business you're in, scriptures for us, okay? You know, I had no customers, okay? I got rid of all the blow dry, I mean, all of the roller sets, so I had no customers. So I thought, well, how am I going to get customers in there? So what I did, I said, well, rather than just sitting around, I'd rather be doing something. So I start sending out free haircuts. Free haircut, your first visit. And the people that were working with me, they had a fit. Oh, you know, I don't want to be giving my work away, you know. I said, well, you know, what would you rather do, sit around and do nothing? You know, at least you'll have something to do. It wasn't a possibility that person was going to come back. Well, what was great about this, not only did we get tons of people coming in, but the stylist got tips, usually 2-3 times more than they would have if their customer was paying. And eventually the salon got so busy, you know, you had to wait like 2-3 weeks to get an appointment. It was like the busiest salon in that particular suburb of Cleveland. And the reason I mentioned that is because we have a givers program, won't get into that, but it's basically, you know, the same principle. You pay for a person's first month, and it's like a numbers game. Some are going to participate, some aren't. But the more people you can get to join your group, you'll have that much better of a chance of succeeding. But anyhow, let's go back to the beauty salon. Eventually, I wound up opening another salon, much bigger salon. And what happened is I wasn't thinking, you know, I should have signed should have asked for a much longer lease. But without realizing it, that the owner had promised the people next to me who owned the restaurant that as soon as my lease is up, that he would give it to them. Well, that's exactly what happened. You know, when I'm losing my lease, I wasn't that depressed. I thought it would be, but I wasn't. I just looked at all the equipment there and I said, well, that's all it is. You know, it's equipment. There's no life in that equipment. The only life there is in Jesus. So I have him, so I'm perfectly satisfied. So I wound out getting a job at a real nice salon. And eventually what happened is Cleveland built what they call Tower City. Now, it was under the Terminal Tower, which was used to be the tallest building in Cleveland. It's not anymore. But underneath it, where it used to be a train station, well, they made a real nice shopping center. One of the places in there was a salon called Europa. Okay, now Europa was like a $1 million salon. It was beautiful. They had skin care, manicures, French baths, a big, huge marble desk. It was like the salon to work at in Cleveland. Well, I wound up getting a job there. Oh, let me back up a little bit. Before I went there, I had always wanted to be a stylist for a national company like Clairol or Redken or something like that, you know. Now, a national representative is someone who goes to various cities and works and promotes their particular product and that's where they take orders on the product. So you get a hotel. They get a hotel room. You go there and you cut hair on stage, and then you promote their product. See, and they would pay really good, pay for all the expenses, the plane fare, all the food, the hotel room. It was great, and I loved it. You know, it was a little bit hard, but sometimes I remember I was in Boston, and they had a big convention there, and instead of having rooms, they had like just a curtain between, each company. And it was a guy next to me. He talked so loud, and I was trying to talk over him, and then he tried to talk over me. We both wound up with sore throats at the end of the day. But anyhow, eventually what I did, I thought, well, now I got some credibility, and now maybe I can start doing some private classes for salons. And that's exactly what I did. I sent out notices, or advertised in one of the hair magazines, and I started doing that, and I did, hundreds, of those. And eventually I kind of got tired of that, traveling, So I decided eventually to give that up, and then that's right after that is when I opened up my other salon. But getting back to Tower City, I started working there, and lo and behold, I met this girl called Susan, and a couple years later, we wound up getting married. That was the best thing that ever happened to me. But I want to go back one second. I wound up getting fired from there, and I'll tell you why. I had these little New Testament Bibles, paperback. And a lot of people that worked on it, they were Christians, and I would just, want a Bible, I'd give it to you, So the boss there, who everybody hated, said, promote the salon, not the Bible. I said, well, I'm not giving these to anybody. I'm just giving them to people who are already Christians. Well, eventually he found an excuse to fire me. But it's fired just about, every week someone would get fired for no reason at all. He wanted to replace them with people who were foreign, That's why it was called Europa, which means Europe in Italian. So if he had somebody that he met, he had another salon in Washington, D.C., and if someone from Washington, D.C. had a visa and they were a good stylist, he'd send them to Cleveland. Of course, pay him cash, and then someone would be gone the next day, or that day. And I remember me and this guy, Bob, we used to say they ought to change the name from Europa to Hair Today and Gone Tomorrow, because I used to talk the whole salon. Geez, I wonder who's going to get fired today. But anyhow, that turned out to be a blessing. I eventually wound up starting a company called Scriptures. And at first, I called it Rosario Salon Products. I wasn't really going to try to promote it to the Christian community. So I just used my name, Rosario Products, used some of my credit to promote it. But eventually, I wanted this product to be Christian, and I wanted to start a company that was geared more towards the Christian community, and eventually I started Scriptures, okay? But I got to back up again. See, I keep forgetting something. When I lost that salon, I remember during that period of time, there was a lot of people, as my customers always say, do you know Jesus? Do you believe in Jesus? And I remember I just feel uncomfortable when someone would ask me that. And then one day, my uncle invited me to a church called, I can't remember the name of the church, right? But anyhow, I never been to a Protestant church. In fact, he used to try to preach to me, and I said, Uncle Jerry, I don't really want to hear that, But for some reason, I thought, well, I'm not doing anything that night, so I'll just go there and see what's going on. I never been to a Protestant church, and I went there. And at the end of, I can't remember exactly what he said. Well, I remember one thing. He said there was a guy in heaven, and he said, why should I let you in here? And the preacher, I guess he was a preacher guy, he said, well, I've been a preacher all my life, and I preached the gospel, and I was a good person, and I helped people, and blah, blah, blah. And St. Peter says, see that red door there? That's where you're going, you know. Then there was another guy that came up there, and he's, you know, he asked him, why should I let you in? And the guy pointed to Jesus. He said, that's why, because of what he did. I never heard anything like that, so it must have had a great impact on me. Because when it was all done, they were having this altar call. I don't even know what the heck that was. Never heard of an altar call. I mean, if you're raised Catholic, you don't know what any of that stuff is. And he said, let's go. I said, no, I want to go up there. And for some reason, you know, I wanted to go up there. And that's when I gave my life to Christ. And my life hasn't been the same since. The first thing I wanted to do was read the Bible. So I kept reading the Bible, reading the Bible. I loved reading the Bible. Every chance I had to read the Bible, I did. And I thank God that because I became knowledgeable from reading as much as I did, I had a friend of mine. This was when I was still married, a girlfriend who I had known. She was a barber. I had known her for a long time. She says, why don't you get on the radio? You know? I says, well, you know, I don't want to spend that kind of money right now, you know. She says, well, I'll tell you what, I'll pay for it. So she offered to pay, because when you have your own show on the radio, you pay for this show. You know, some shows that have advertising, but very, very few shows you hear on the radio, they're paid for by donations. Now, periodically we would ask, well, anyhow, the name of the show turned out to be To Get a Life. It's from 1 John 5:12. He that has the Son has life. He that does not have the Son of God does not have life. And so that's what we named the show. And we had a live show every day, 12 noon to 12:30. And on Wednesdays and Thursdays, we had live call-ins. So I learned a lot just from them call-ins. I thought basically at that time, everybody believed the same way I did, but my eyes were open. That's the furthest thing from the truth. I can't believe how many different doctrines there are out there. But anyhow, I wound up going with that. I said, you know, if we get on there for 3 months, Sherry, I'll thank God every day, you know. Well, we wound up being on there for 4 months. And I loved it. But we kind of ran out of money. We didn't want to ask people for money. I mean, we just at the end of the show, if you wanted to make a donation here, but we didn't go, you know, make a big deal. And I said, God's in control of this, so if he wants me on there longer, the donations will be coming in. But eventually, I quit that show and started working for Helene Curtis. Well, that was before, I'm sorry. Where was that? I was at Europa, that's right. Got fired from there. Wound up marrying Susan 2 years later. And that's when we started from Rosario Salon Pranas, we went to Scriptures, because that's the group of people we wanted. You know, I remember customers that were Christians used to always tell me, I don't know why Christians don't stick together. And that thought never left my mind. I thought, wow, this would be a great way for Christians to help each other. All you do is buy a product, you know, you're probably going to be using anyway, or buy some lessons online, or lessons on CD that you probably would buy anyways. And then we'll take that money that we take it from them, we'll pay a commission on that. So, you know, that's a great way of just help, knowing that when you either purchase any of our products or join the Bible lessons online or the Bible lessons on CD, you're helping another brother in Christ. And the Bible tells us very clearly, you know, when we have opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially, that means to the uttermost, to the highest level, especially those who are of the household of the faith. So a person has a great opportunity to help their brother simply by just, you know, purchasing some of our products or the lessons or the CD. And how easy is that? By the way, that's from Galatians 6:10. So that's what we wound up doing, starting that, and little by little, and this is what we always tell our members, little by little, the company started to grow. And there were many times, I can't believe, many times when we wanted to give up. But I kept saying, you know, no, this, you know, God's behind this. I believe that. I still believe it. You know, we got to keep going. You know, there were like miracle after miracle of, you know, money coming from this place and that place. And, you know, it wasn't necessarily coming out of our pocket anymore. Because we spent a lot of money starting this company. We had, you know, a lot of equipment needed to buy and a computer program that cost tens of thousands of dollars. So this is not like a Mickey Mouse operation that you can, you know, start for $100 or something. You can do it, but we can't. We couldn't do that. We had to spend a lot of money to get where we're at. But in the meantime, we got, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, that includes scriptures, that joined this company. So we enjoy it. I love it. I can't begin to tell you how much I enjoy doing these calls, talking to people on the phone, witnessing to people, and you name it. I love every minute of it. I hope that if you join, that you'll do like what I did when I had the salon. You know, never give up. Just keep going and going and going. And, you know, I don't know if any of you like Donald Trump, but one of his pet sayings is never give up. In fact, I remember, and I'm going to close with this, I remember seeing him on a live show. It was called Ronnie Deutsch, and I used to love that show because every week he'd have somebody who maybe started a business out of their garage or their basement, and then now they're millionaires, you know. But anyhow, he had Donald Trump on there one day, and then he asked him, hey, Donald, you know, if you could tell us what made you successful, and it was, what's the key to becoming successful? And I remember it word for word. He says, well, I know a lot of people who are millionaires, and all of them became millionaires because they never gave up. He said, I also know a lot of people that could have been millionaires, and the reason they didn't become millionaires is because they gave up. So Donnie said, so the secret of success is never giving up. He says, you got it. That's it. Now, I don't think this is a coincidence, but somebody called me today. Here's someone who's in and out of the program for the last 10 years. In for, you know, 3-4 months and out. Then 6 months later, come back in. I'm not telling, this is the truth, and it happens a lot, okay? But it just happened to somebody today. They've probably done it more than anybody. You know, and then 2 months later, 3 months later, 4 months, quit. Don't hear from them again for another 6 months. And this goes on and on and on and on for a lot of people. See, this is why we always tell people, you know, don't give up. Don't judge how can you judge whether or not you're going to be successful in a couple of months, okay? That's just plain silly. You know, I remember after I opened my salon, I went to college at night and took up some business courses. And I remember the professor there, one of the things he said, so if you ever decide to open up your own business, he says, you know, my secret is don't expect to break even in, you know, a couple months or so. It takes time, I remember him saying that. It takes time to build a business. In my first salon, I did $108 my first month. And I still had to pay my rent, electric bill, phone bill, cleaning service, you know, all this. I still had to pay for all that. So I lost a lot of money the first month. But little by little, you know, that thought never entered my mind, okay? Hey, if you don't make it in a couple months, time to put a for sale sign in the window. That thought never entered my mind because I kept thinking what that guy said. Here's a professor of business. It takes time to build a business. And I see it happening every single day in this company. The ones that aren't making any money are the ones that try this for a couple months and quit. Others that stay around are making more money than they're spending on, much more money than they're spending on a monthly basis, and that's called a profit. Now, I'll just give you one more thing, because I've told this many times before, and I think it's so important to know why you shouldn't quit, okay? Because we're not talking about spending thousands of dollars a month on this program, okay? There was a guy that joined the program. A month later, he joined the auto program. I mean, the co-op advertising program. And he joined the $95 one. And he was a good recruiter. And, well, anyhow, in his fourth month, he called up the office and wanted to talk to me personally. And he said, "What kind of scam are you running there?" I said, "What are you talking about, scam?" He said, "Well, I've been in this program for 4 months. I've been at the highest level of co-op. I thought I'd be making thousands of dollars per month." That's what he told me. I said, "Well, you know, let me look at your, see how much you're making here." I looked at his record, and he wasn't making thousands per month. He was certainly making good money for the short amount of period of time he was in there, because he was on the $95 co-op, and that's why. And he was following up with people. And I said, "You know what? I'm not afraid to mention his name, because you won't know his last name. You know," I said, "you know what, Terry? Your check doubled from the month before." And you know what he did? He hung the phone up on me. And he called the Better Business Bureau and said that we made all these promises, and which we never do. I mean, God forbid we're going to start doing that. We don't want to give false hope to anybody. We tell everybody it takes time to build a business. If you don't want to believe us, you know, that's up to you. But why would we tell people that if it's not true? I mean, if that were not true, we'd have been out of business a long time ago. So we know that's the key to success, is never giving up. Give yourself some time to build a group. But anyhow, you know, when someone complains to the IRS, they always send you stuff, and you have to answer it, or you get that, if you don't answer it, you know, then they hold that against you, the Better Business Bureau. Not hold it against you, but they put it in the report if you call there. We sent them all the material that we send to people, and, you know, they knew it was just somebody who was angry, because I guess they probably get that all the time. Someone just for no reason at all, because they're just angry at you, they'll call up their Better Business Bureau so it looks bad for you. But when they find out that person is not telling the truth, they'll always dismiss the case, and that's exactly what they did. But this is the first time I've ever done this, and I do it more now than I did before. I thought, let me look. He was growing pretty fast here, so let me just look at the percentage of growth he was having every month. And let me kind of go down about 3 years, 2.5, 3 years, something like that. So if he would have kept in the program doing exactly what he did, you know, month after month after month, and about 2.5, 3 years, I think it was, he would have been making $3,500 a month. See? So, I mean, and then he would have found out that we were telling him the truth. See, but he quit after 4 months. But that's what happens. And they just wind up going to another company, and then 2 months later they quit again. So they're like on a merry-go-round. They become a multi-level marketing junkie. It's just one program to another, one program to another, and I can't begin to tell you how many people tell me, "Well, I've been in network marketing for 20 years. Well, have you made any money?" "No." I said, why? "Well, every company I go to, after 6 months, if I don't make any money, I quit." So they've probably been in 30, 40 different companies. And you're not going to be a success that way, believe me. And that's what we want to do. We want people to be successful, because if you're successful, then we're successful. So why on earth would we, you know, give you advice, cause you to fail? I mean, wouldn't that be the stupidest thing to do? We'd be out of business in no time, you know. But anyhow, that's part of my life. I hope you enjoyed it. Now, the phones will be open. If you have a question or you want to make a comment, just press 1 on your touch-tone phone, and then I'll be able to put you on the air. Actually, not the air, on the telephone line. Just press 1 on your touch-tone phone. You can ask a question, or you can, you know, give a comment. usually people don't like commenting for whatever reason. But that's fine. Now, in case you didn't know, these are always archived. So this one will probably be on your site, everybody's site, okay, in the live, the tab that says live training shows. You can just click on there, and it'll be on there. You can listen to it 24/7. You can send your friends there. Other shows that we did we thought were important are on there. Sometimes when we do the business shows, a lot of them are kind of the same, so we don't put all of them on there. But we always do kind of the same because we don't know if the person on the line is a new person or they, heard it 20 times. But anyhow, that's about all I have to say today. I really thank everybody for joining me this Thursday. I'll let you know when the next one is going to be. It'll probably be on a Saturday, but not this Saturday, probably the following Saturday. But you'll get a notice in your script news. And one more thing. There's a man that died 2016 years ago on a cross. He died on that cross and suffered for you. And it took away all your sins so that you could be in heaven with him. And he loves you, and he proved it by doing that. And I just want you to know, this is from my heart. If you know me and talk to me many times, you know that I'm not a phony, okay? But I also love each and every one of you. First and foremost of all, you're my brother or sister in Christ. And with that, thanks for listening. God bless each and every one of you, and have a nice weekend.